The mysterious Gilgal Rephaim, the Wheel of the Giants, a remnant of the Nephilim, was just marked. The equinox was just marked at dawn in the Wheel of the Giants in the Bashan in Israel. We have to talk about that. What a rich history this thing has, and has a lot to do with Genesis 6 stuff. Also, thousands of Swedes are implanting microchips into their hands. Is this a sign of the Antichrist? We're going to talk about all of that and more on today's Peck Report. All right, everybody. Hope you are doing well. So, lots to talk about today. We're just going to get right into it. So, Breaking Israel News just reported on this equinox. So, from the Israel Bible, Deuteronomy 3:11 says, "Only King Og of Bashan was left of the remaining Rephaim. His bedstead, an iron bedstead, is now in Rabbah of the Ammonites. It is 9 amet long and 4 amet wide by the standard amah." So Bashan, now in Bashan, we see this Wheel of the Giants, this Gilgal Rephaim thing, which is very, very odd. And just recently, there was, just this past Sunday morning, there was a biannual astronomical event, and it was marked on an ancient structure in a remote section of northern Israel. And the structure remains an enigma to archaeologists, but some link it to biblical giants. So it's basically like Israel's version of Stonehenge. And you know what? If you haven't seen this thing, let me pull up a picture for you. But it's very strange. It's been studied for a while, and you just kind of have to see it to believe it. But here's one picture of it that I can show you. But yeah, like my apologies. Here we go. All right. But yeah, like the article says, some have equated this with the biblical giants. So we're going to talk about why. We're going to get into some history, and we're going to get into some biblical stuff about this very strange site. So, after the Six-Day War in 1967, archaeologists studying an aerial map of Israel discovered this strange formation of 5 concentric rings of loose rock located some 10 miles east of the coast of the Sea of Galilee, in the middle of a large plateau covered with hundreds of single-chamber megalithic tombs called dolmens. The formation is not recognizable from the ground, appearing as random piles of rocks, but from above, it's impressive. So that picture that you just saw, it has an outer ring of more than nearly 520 feet wide and 8 feet high. It's called Rum El Hiri in Arabic, meaning the stone heap of the wild cat, strangely enough. And in Hebrew, Gilgal Rephaim, or Wheel of the Giants. You know, immediately that comes to mind with the wild cat thing was the lion men that's talked about in the Old Testament. And some have equated that to having some type of connection with Nephilim activity. Very strange. At its center is a mound of loose stones over 65 feet in diameter and over 16 feet tall, covering a burial chamber almost 20 feet long. The entire formation is composed of over 40,000 tons of loose basalt rocks. It was estimated that the transportation and building of the massive monument would have required more than 25,000 working days. Estimates as to when it was built vary widely, but the site's believed to be between 5 and 6,000 years old. Now imagine that. According to some timelines, that would have been... Well, I mean, it depends on your timeline. It could have been either around the time of the flood, maybe just before. Maybe this was a bigger structure and the flood kind of messed it up. Or it could have been around that time of where they saw the evil report. They saw the sons of Anak, you know, the leavings behind of the Nephilim. And how they came back there, we don't know. How they returned, we don't know. But that's a fun topic to talk about. Now, in comparison, the Egyptian pyramids were built some 4,500 years ago, and Stonehenge was built some 3,500 years ago. So between 5 and 6,000 years old is impressive. Now, it's interesting to note that the region is known as the Bashan, where Og, the king, came out against the Israelites at the time of their entrance into the Promised Land, but was vanquished in battle. Og was an Amorite king, the ruler of Bashan, which contained 60 walled cities and many unwalled towns, with his capital at Ashtaroth. Biblical scholars believe the prophet Amos was referring to Og when he referred to a giant Amorite. Amos 2:9 says, "Yet I destroyed the Amorite before them, whose stature was like the cedars, and who was stout as the oak, destroying his boughs above and his trunk below." Now, in Deuteronomy and later in the book of Numbers and Joshua, Og is called the last of the Rephaim, a Hebrew word that's sometimes interpreted as meaning giant. Sometimes it's interpreted as being the dead. Actually, Derek and Sharon Gilbert have a new book coming out called Veneration. We'll have to get them on this show about the ancient death cults of Israel and how that really plays out a lot in the Bible and in Bible prophecy. We'll have to bring them on Peck Report sometime to talk about that because it's a fascinating topic. We actually just recorded 4 episodes of Skywatch TV with them. That'll be airing later on this year. Deuteronomy 3:11, which we read before, is the verse that says King of Bashan was left of the remaining Rephaim, and it talks about his bed and all that, which there's actually a lot of ancient stuff with his bed. The reason that they gave the dimensions of the bed was not only to show his size. There was a lot of ancient sex magic kind of stuff going on back then, and it's a reference to that. Now, the biblical measurement of an amah, literally the length of a forearm, is generally considered to be 19.2 inches, which would mean that Og's bed was over 14 feet long and 6 feet wide. If Og had been the leader of a nation of pre-Abrahamic giants in the region of the Golan, it would certainly explain the existence of this mammoth stone structure and others like it. Now, you know, extra biblical sources like the Midrash explains that this fugitive who warned Abraham that Lot had been captured was actually Og, and that Og had escaped the flood in the generation of Noah by clinging to the side of the ark. I don't believe that. I don't think most Christians believe that. But that's kind of what was represented in that terrible Noah movie from Darren Aronofsky that basically nobody liked. Now, as far as what this Wheel of the Giants would have been used for, there's no consensus. Now, since excavations have yielded very few material remains, archaeologists theorize that this site was not a defensive position or a residential quarter, but most likely was a ritual center. And of course, because that was a big deal back then, especially to the giants. In 2007, the site was excavated by Joseph Garfinkel and Michael Frakman of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Frakman returned to the summer of 2010 for further investigations of the site's date and function, and Frakman, believes that the center area was built the same time as the rings. Now, Frakman told Breaking Israel News, quote, "I wouldn't call it a religious center. It was more of a gathering place for rituals, though not for burials," end quote. So, interesting. Now, some have speculated that this might have something to do with the sun and the stars. Dr. Frakman wrote about Gilgal Rephaim in the Journal of the Institute of Archaeology of Tel Aviv University in 2017, noting the astronomical aspects of the site. So he wrote, quote, "Certain architectural elements of Rum El Hiri," say, you know, that's the Arabic name for it, "are aligned with celestial phenomena, namely with the azimuth of sunrise on specific days of the year. For instance, it was claimed that at both equinoxes, a spectator standing in the geometrical center of the complex would see a sun rising exactly in the east through the gun sight created by two exceptionally large boulders installed in the outermost wall. Due to the precession of the earth, which gradually changes the azimuth of the sunrise, this phenomenon cannot be observed from the same spot today. However, as this is a very slow process, the spectator must move aside only slightly to witness the sunrise as the architect of Rum El Hiri intended," end quote. So, Now, archaeologist Jonathan Mitzrachi and Anthony Aveni, studying the structure since the late 1980s, believe the site was used as a celestial observatory. And, you know, it probably wouldn't have been the same way we use observatories today to just, you know, look at the stars, but probably used to worship them. So the equinox, which is the instant of time when the plane of the Earth's equator passes through the center of the sun, has taken place last Monday. So this is extremely recent. So notches in the wall indicate the precise locations of the sunrise for both the spring and fall equinoxes. The walls of Rum el-Hari seem to have pointed to star risings for the period and may have been predictors of rainy seasons, which is a crucial bit of information for the sheep herders of the Bashan Plain. So this site has obviously been neglected for quite some time. The rings contain more questions than answers. You know, it had become like the Stonehenge or the pyramids, and that's what Dr. Freakman says. He says, quote, fast food restaurants and souvenir shops would be built around it, and the crowds would destroy or steal anything worth studying. For the time being, it is good that the general public does not come in droves, end quote. But in addition to being a science, archaeology in Israel has had political and religious connotations as well. So Freakman said, quote, I would like to return and study the site. There is much to learn, but it is different. It is difficult to raise funds for sites in the Golan. Even after President Trump recognized Israeli sovereignty in the Golan, many people are still reluctant to archaeological research in the area. So we will have to see. And again, it would be interesting if they did more excavations there to see what these ancient giants, ancient Rephaim, ancient Nephilim, you know, whatever word we want to use for them, were up to. Because if there is ever a return of the Nephilim, if Bible prophecy can be interpreted that way, and again, we're going to have to get Derek and Sharon on the show for talk about veneration, because they talk quite a bit about that, then it would be good to know what these guys were up to, what these evil beings were up to. All right. Now, we have to talk about Mark of the Beast technology today. Thousands of Swedes, you probably have seen this making the rounds, thousands of Swedes are implanting microchips into their hands. Is this a sign of the Antichrist? We have to talk about that. But first, you must go become a member at dailyrenegade.com. $10 a month or $100 a year. I suggest the $100 a year because then you get 2 months for free. You only have to pay for it once and you don't have to think about it for an entire year. And it really does help us support Daily Renegade. We got some amazing things coming to you guys, and I can't wait to launch the new site. It's going to be very, very, very soon. We're going to be doing that. But so make sure you go become a member at DailyRenegade.com today. Also, for member if you're not a member and you just want to watch for free, you can subscribe to our channel here. Click the bell for notifications. You can still go to Daily Renegade and get articles and stuff like that. But please do consider becoming a member. It helps us out. It doesn't only help us out, but we take 20% of your membership and we send it to ministries that we help support. So Created Equal, which is a great pro-life ministry. And we have two ministries that we've talked about before that go into the Middle East, that go into Israel to minister to Jewish people, try to give them their history back, try to make it so they can have freedom in their own land, and also present the gospel to them. So that's the Jerusalem Connection and Copper Scroll Project. Also, we support St. Jude's, so your membership can help help some kids be treated for cancer and hopefully be cured of cancer. My son was one of them, Nathan Peck. By the way, I did want to mention real quick, too, if you care to donate to help, all donations that come through DailyRenegade.com right now go to Nathan. And it's very, very expensive having a child with cancer, as I'm sure you can imagine. Incredibly expensive, and we absolutely can't cover the cost of this on our own. So if you would like to donate, go to dailyrenegade.com/donate. There is a link to a GoFundMe here, and or you can donate through PayPal here, or you could even send a check or money order here. All of this goes to Nathan, his treatments, traveling expenses, because we're constantly having to go back and forth between hospitals, and you know, we have to go back to Memphis, Tennessee, to St. Jude sometimes, and it's very, very expensive. And it's going to be this way for the next couple of years. So, but what I keep telling people is your donations are saving this little guy's life. So, it's a big help. Thank you so much for doing that. But if you donate, donations go right to Nathan. If you want to support Daily Renegade, best way to do it is to get a membership. So you can, once again, that website is dailyrenegade.com. Go get a membership. Buy some stuff in the merch store. We have a merch store now. We have Nephilim Hunter t-shirts and things like that. We're going to add some more stuff to that. It's going to be great. And it's great now, but it's going to be even better. All right. Members, hang on the line. We got more to talk about. Everybody else, thank you so much for joining us. Take care. God bless. All right, members. So you've probably seen a story like this going around, and I've been meaning to talk about it for a while, but there in Sweden, there's a big push towards Mark of the Beast technology, really. I mean, I'm not saying that these implants are exactly the Mark of the Beast, but it's definitely a precursor to them, and I think it's flirting way too much with the Mark of the Beast to even have anything to do with this. I would never have an implant in my hand. I would never put an implant in my hand. That's just too close to Bible prophecy. And, you know, we know what Revelation says. It says that those who accept the mark and worship the beast, then they are in eternal torment. I mean, they have no hope of salvation. Excuse me. I have not had my coffee yet. Actually, real quick, this is a great mug. My wife bought this for me for Father's Day. That's the Trump. And it says, "Josh, you are a great dad, truly an incredible father. You've been terrific. Other dads, total disasters. Ask anyone. They all know. Believe me, everyone agrees." That's great. So Christina got that for me for a Father's Day. I enjoy it very much. Okay, so there's a growing movement of Swedes that are implanting microchips into their hands to replace credit cards and cash. The reason we need to talk about this is because this is coming to the U.S. This is going to be the next big thing. This is going to be as common as having a credit card in your wallet. And if you don't have one, you're going to have, I mean, imagine just paying everything in cash. Some people do, and that's great. If you can do it, you should do it. But like credit cards are going to become obsolete. You won't be able to use credit cards even anymore because it's going to be a chip in your hand. It's just like how you can't swipe your card almost anywhere anymore because the card has a chip now and they have chip readers. So swiping has become obsolete. It's going to basically be this, and they're phasing out cash. And they're doing this in Sweden. So the microchip pioneer, Johan Osterlund, said to New York Post, quote, "Tech will move into the body. I am sure of that," end quote. So more than 4,000 citizens have opted to insert. So they've volunteered. They've opted to insert this chip, which is about the size of a grain of rice. The chip can also help monitor health and replace key cards for access into offices and buildings. The progressive country hopes the chips catch on and thereby eliminate the need for cash. That's the goal. And they're very open about it. Microchip owners can simply swipe their hands to pay in stores. Ben Liberton, a Swedish scientist, said, quote, "The problem is, who owns this data? Do I get a letter from my insurance company saying premiums are going up before I know I'm ill? If I use a chip to buy lunch, go to the gym, and go to work, will somebody have all this info about me? Is it stored and kept safe?" Pause that quote for a minute. So think about that. They would have access to all your data, know what you eat, know if you're sick, and they could jack up your insurance rates just if you eat a burger or something. I mean, there's this whole myth that red meat is bad for you. It's not. It's wonderful for you. It's really good for you. What's bad for you is all the carbs that people usually eat when they eat red meat. And those studies that say that red meat is bad, they don't take that into account. It's the potatoes and, you know, that kind of stuff. That's the stuff that makes people sick. Red meat in itself is wonderful. So these myths get propagated. Now you have a chip in your hand and they can tell if you eat a steak, even if it's making you healthier, they can tell and they can mark up your, they can jack up your premiums because of that. So let's continue on with his quote here. He says, people have shown people have shown they're happy to give up privacy for convenience. The chip is very convenient. So could we accept our data being shared very widely before we know the risks? End quote. Now, of course, some pastors and end-time theologians, the microchip to them is a concerning sign of the Antichrist. So Christian Headlines previously reported David Doyle from Hope Christian Fellowship Church in Iowa has warned against people implanting microchips. He says, quote, "I take microchipping as a form of the mark. There's many pieces of the mark, and then again, all those pieces of the mark is designed to control. It will eventually become something that's mandatory, and for those who refuse it, you will have to deal with the authorities who don't appreciate your opinions," end quote. This stuff is coming so fast. I believe we're going to see this in our lifetime. I mean, well, we're seeing it now, but it would not surprise me. Think about how much culture has changed in just the past 2 years. It would not surprise me one bit if this type of thing became mandatory in the next 5 years. It wouldn't surprise me one bit. We got to start preparing for this now. We got to start stockpiling. Metals are always good, you know, gold and silver and stuff. We got to start stockpiling on that. If you take kratom the way I do, you stockpile on that because you're not going to be able to buy any. I don't know how beneficial it would be to stockpile cash, because I think that that's going to become obsolete and worthless. So we have to get creative here. And this is, there's different theories on if we're going to be here during the Mark of the Beast or not. Even if not, there's a precursor to the Mark of the Beast that's happening now. And we have to be prepared. So that's why we're talking about this. We're going to keep up on this story as news develops, but it would be a good idea to have some plans in place just in case, because times are changing so fast. I think that this is going to hit so fast, so hard, we're not going to know what hit us, and very soon we're not even going to be allowed to comment on it or talk about it, and it'll just be socially acceptable to be implanting yourself and allowing the government to control all your data. That's ultimately what the enemy wants, and that's what we read about when we read about that prophecy in Revelation 13. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for joining me. Until next time, take care. God bless. Thank you.